Good morning.
I hope you can all hear me all right.
Now, you put a man of a certain stature on a grand stage like this with Victorian era air conditioning, you get one of two things. One is opera, and the other is that I am going to roll up my sleeves and loosen my tie, if that's all right. So yes, we're going to talk about world domination through librarianship. I put that, folks ask me for a title, and they normally ask me about a year in advance, and so I always make sure that I get provocative titles that actually mean nothing so I can talk about whatever I want. And that is my plan for the day. So, actually, I'm going to sort of build on a few remarks. I was asked very nicely at the beginning of this year to put together a piece for National Library Day, and I did. And my plan was to begin this morning the same way that I began that talk, which was to just live up to the fact that, yes, I am an American. Now, if you don't know what this picture is, you haven't watched enough bad comedy. This is the Griswolds from European Vacation, and they did represent potentially the worst tourists in the world. And just to give you a sense, this was me yesterday living that dream. So, you know, I've got the nice sun hat and I've got the strap underneath because they have to have that. And there we all to get our picture by Parliament and Big Ben and, you know, go see all the things. So that's where I was going to give my talk. And you know, nice little joke and fun to have, right? Because when you come in from another country, it seems awfully presumptuous to give you guys an action plan for how you live in this world. And I know and have been watching a little of what's going on in the news. I understand a lot about what's going on with issues of austerity budgets and trying to cut deficits and looking at the public library sector. And so my plan was to say, look, this is how we do it in America. Feel free to use it if you want, right? But let's be honest. This is a little Mark Anthony verbal irony that it really is what I think you should do. So I'm going to just discard that whole trope. Because what I can speak to, while I can't speak to what it's like to be a British librarian, what I can't speak to what it means to run a library in the UK or deal with budget situations in the UK, I do feel a certain level of confidence in talking to what your role is as a librarian. Because I believe very strongly that librarianship is a profession with 3,000 to 4,000 years of history. And while we love to build up bridges and we love to build up walls, the truth is that we share so much in common. And we need to embrace sharing those in common and talking about that. One of the things that drives me absolutely insane is the idea that in many parts of our profession, we've adopted this sort of reductionist view of the universe. We've adopted an academic model. Now, the academic model, and I can speak, once again, very confidently about this, it can be best sort of phrased in a Yoda-like mathematical equation, which is divide pond until biggest fish within you are. Right? So I am a scholar, but of course I can't be simply a scholar, I'm a social scientist. And I can't be simply a social scientist, I must be an information scientist. But not just an information scientist, a library scientist who studies reference on Thursday next door, right? And so that's okay, because now I'm the world leader in that, so I can get tenure, retire, and sit in my ivory tower. But we do that to ourselves. Can we honestly say that an academic librarian at, say, Oxford, has more in common with an academic librarian at a small college with 1,000 students in the rural area than they do with a public librarian in the middle of Liverpool? Can we honestly say that, no, I can't learn from what you're doing in a school setting, in a primary, secondary school, because I'm a public librarian and we don't do that thing called reading and learning and such. All right, so we have to sort of stop building barriers. Now, as I'm going to talk about, that doesn't mean that we all are the same, and it doesn't mean that we should make our services all the same, quite the opposite. But it does mean that the obligation that we have as professional librarians is to bridge. I organized a conference many years ago called the Virtual Reference Desk Conference, and within it we just talked about how to answer questions online in the days of email and then chat. It was very exciting. And we constantly, we give out these, you know, what could we do better in this conference? And we would constantly get, I want a strand for academic libraries, I want a strand for public libraries, I want a strand for libraries that have a red building, I want, you know. And I was sort of complaining one day, and a wonderful librarian from the National Library of Canada, when there was a National Library of Canada, said, you know, that's the wrong approach. It's not that it's unimportant where your library is or what type your library is or what community you support. What it is that it's your obligation as a professional to bridge great ideas into that environment. And by the way, that's not just from other libraries and not just from other countries. That's from other sectors. That's from other industries. That's from other schools of thought. That's even things from other, gasp, political ideologies. So I'm not going to pretend and play this game. I am going to say that I feel your pain. This is a graph of the economic, what we call in the United States, the Great Recession, which we are proud, proud, proud to have begun just for you. Thank you. You know, because we didn't give bankers enough free rein, we've decided to give them more. Anyway, so around 2007, 2008, a couple of people decided, hey, let's invest in lots of real estate that means nothing, and suddenly people realize what happens, and gross domestic product dropped by about $1 trillion. And we're all still in the midst of recovery. But if this story sounds familiar, what happened was, about here, public librarians began being laid off. Public libraries began being closed. People began looking at how do we reduce funding, because that led to recession, which led to unemployment, which led to lower local tax base. And in the United States, local tax base is vital and important to what happens in public libraries. Now, this is not all bad news, because right about here, all those public librarians that were laid off decided they needed to go get another degree. So they all went to a university, and I had a better job. Right? So all the academic librarians were suddenly going, yay, job security, not realizing that what happens a little further down is eventually people can't pay for the education, because as we know in the US, it's very important to put people in debt for education and healthcare, don't ask me why. And so eventually those jobs began becoming depressed economy. So we saw a lot of what I'm reading about in The Guardian, what I'm seeing on Twitter, what I'm seeing with the discussion of local councils. We saw a lot of this. And what's amazing is people don't necessarily understand, in the United States, we actually have less security for public libraries than you do. Now, what I hear about is, oh, all the local councils are ignoring the law. You have a law, right? We have a, gosh, let's have a library mentality. I mean, it's really, it's a different world. But this idea of security and what happened. And so what I want to talk to you about is what happened. And I want to talk to you, I'm going to do the thing that we know what happens if you ask someone to recount a story. So in social sciences, if we ask you, how did you get here today? Or how did you become a librarian? Or any story, really, people will tell you, which is lively. And they will lie through their teeth. They will have no idea they're lying through their teeth, but they will. Because what our brains do is we don't want to be caught saying things like, I became a librarian because I was last in line when it was signing up for degrees. Right? We want it to be intelligent and meaningful and understanding. So what we do is our brains recreate our narratives on a regular basis. So I'm going to admit to you, I'm about to recreate a narrative. I'm going to make this action plan of how public libraries in particular, but all libraries in the US and other countries sort of responded to this in a positive way, because there's a happy ending. And I'm going to make it sound like I was the one orchestrating this, because I don't have a big enough ego as it is. No. It happened in lots of little places. It happened with experimentation. It happened with trial and error. But it happened. And so what I'm going to give you is my action plan. So the action plan for libraries, and really the action plan for librarians, and we're going to talk about that difference real soon, is an action plan to talk about world domination. Now, you're saying, Dave, really? World domination? Us? Could you do a worse job? I mean, just take a moment. If librarians were in charge, would we really screw it up quite as bad as it is now? But second thing is, we often look at these grand schemes and we just sort of push them off like, oh, no, that's not me. Thank you very much. We're librarians. Isn't it nice? It's not nice to be a librarian. It's awesome to be a librarian. It's not, we do nice things. We don't do nice things. We do incredibly important things. We have to begin realizing the power that we have. We have to realize the stature that we have. We have to realize that while we may look at ourselves as somehow a mousy profession caught somewhere, or worse, we see our publics as perceiving us as a mousy, obscure thing, we have to understand that through history, we have been a power for societal change and a power for advancement of humankind. We helped bring Europe out of the Dark Ages. We helped spark a Renaissance. We helped build pyramids. We helped build aqueducts. We helped Rome expand. Librarians had that power. And librarians have that power now. So what I ask you to do is not to look at this, and if you get the reaction of, oh, no, 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 that's not nice for world domination, stop it. Or if you look at that and say, oh, no, 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 no. I was having dinner last night, and we were with Phil Bradley, and Phil was saying that he had a librarian who said, you know, if I do my job really well, no one will know. Stop it. This is all about self-aggrandizement. We're worth it. It's okay. So my action plan. We're going to start by first conquering our own demons. Because as a library field, we have demons. We have problems. We have internal debates. And I will tell you that we often take on airs and definitions that are not helpful to our profession. Once we have that, we need to talk about controlling the narrative. We need to talk about controlling the narrative not only about librarians and librarianship, but of whole communities. I'll give you some examples of that. I'm going to tell you then we need to get invited by being present. What that means is we need to be out in our communities so that our communities invite our participation, invite our guidance, invite us to be part of planning. And we must understand that we are never neutral. We are never unbiased. We always add value. So let's jump right into it. First demon to conquer. Competition. You are not competing with Google or Amazon or Apple. Stop it, stop it, stop it. Google is not in the information business. Even Google will tell you Google's not in the information business. Google is in the advertising business. It is the world's largest advertiser. It distorts search results based upon it. It changes how people find things. It explains why they give things away. Google is about your eyeballs and selling your interest. That is what it's about. And anytime it has gotten too far away from that, it has been pulled back to it by stockholders. It has been pulled back in terms of making a business thing. By the way, not only is Google not in the same business we're in, when they tried to get in the same business we were in, they walked away because it was too hard. Does anyone remember Google Books? And we were going to scan everything? I was at Harvard at the time, and Harvard said, our biggest problem with working with Google is figuring out how to get the moving trucks on the quad to take the books away to be scanned. There are no more moving trucks. There are no more attempts to scan. There is no idea about preserving this for history. Now Google has about the right to be forgotten. This idea that somehow Google is going to take our jobs, I would love it if they could actually do it. But they can't, and they won't, and it's not their purpose. We are not in competition with Google. Kim Silk, who's an academic librarian, once said, Google is the greatest gift to librarians ever. It has solved our document delivery problem. Right? When people come in and say, I need this information, rather than us having to go and get postage, we can simply find it online and we can provide it to people. That's a help for us. Apple is not in our business. Well, you say, well, we never really thought they were, but how many iPads have we purchased recently, right? Apple is in the walled garden business. It's building a beautiful walled garden filled with music, right? Filled with books, filled with everything that works on Apple devices. Right? This is not the same business that we're in. E-books. Oh, they're in the e-book business. Has anyone seen the Apple e-book offering and yawned considerably? When Apple, when Steve Jobs, who looks much better than me on a stage, got up and said, we are going to change e-books forever, what he meant was we are going to figure out how to charge money and take the page and put it in bits and add no value.
There was no annotation. There was no multimedia integration. There was no separation of delivery. There was no unified authoring. There was no discussion. There was no social aspect. Everything that we know about reading, which is reading is not a solitary activity, it is a conversation, they ignored. There is a huge opportunity in e-books, and that is to recreate what an e-book is, and neither of these two parties are doing it. Amazon is not in our business. Amazon, do you guys know what Walmart is? But you can buy books, and you can buy rakes, and you can buy hoes, and you can buy, by the way, that little Roman helmet was sold on Amazon, right? If that's the business that you're in, do you sell gardening supplies in your library? That's what they want to do. So we're not in the same business. Stop it, stop it, stop it. By the way, in case you're wondering who the competition is, all my public librarian friends, nod when you hear the following: police, fire, parks and recreation, right? All my academic friends, professors who don't get it, IT who thinks, oh, we can license a database, right? These are our potential frenemies that we can work together. If you don't know what frenemies are, it's lovely that it died in America, but it means the people that you're close to but you could kill on a regular basis. Your family. All right, next demon to conquer. I was so worried this was going to be a reserved UK crowd, so we're good. I did a presentation in Australia, and like no one laughed, and I'm like, are you kidding me? This is Australia. You people didn't get drunk before you came here? What's I did! All right. Our next demon to conquer, libraries. How many libraries do I have in the room currently? Put your hands down. You don't look like a brick building, right? What do libraries do? Exert gravity and shield you from the rain, right? Or they're an abstract org chart. But we love to talk about our libraries. We love to give our libraries credit. When we put out press releases, the library shall have the following programs. No, it's housed in the library. But you're doing it. You made the choices, right? So this is from the Oxford English Dictionary, the US edition. So, you know, we have Z's. Librarian is a person, typically with a degree in library science, who administers or assists in a library. This is not a good definition, right? This is what the world has. But why is it a bad definition? Well, first of all, degree in library science. We know that there are three ways to become a librarian. By a degree, by title, I was hired and called a librarian, or by spirit. We know that there are librarians out there, and I don't just mean the people who organize the book on their nightstands. I'm talking about people who, like Brewster Kahle, who get it, and they want to preserve information, share information and such, but they don't even know they're librarians. But is this a good definition? The real problem with this definition is it's reliant on defining you as a human being, as an individual, as a person, in reference to a building or an org chart. Right? In other words, this is the classic complaint, what other profession was ever named after the building? Right? Well, accountants, just in case you forget counting houses. Right? But the problem is we don't know what a library is. So here is, yes we do, Dave, we have a definition for that. We know clearly what a library is. A library is a building or room containing collections of books, periodicals, and sometimes, really radically, films and recorded music for people to read, borrow, refer to, right? Or a collection of books and periodicals held in a library. But here's the problem. That doesn't really tell us much, right? First of all, we know that that includes things that aren't libraries. Right? There are lots of rooms or buildings that contain books and sometimes recorded music and collections, right? But we don't call them libraries. Right? We know that, for example, there are whole buildings full of materials from stack to the ceiling. There live in these people, we call them hoarders, right? That's a pathological condition. Right? We don't want to call those libraries. Quick joke, what is the difference between a librarian and a hoarder? Librarians use canvas bags. All right. Sorry, they're lovely bags. They really are. Right, Right? It includes things like the book sales. In the United States, I don't know if you have this, we have what are called friends groups, friends of the libraries. And what they are is they're really retired librarians who've lost their job. But they don't want to weed the collection, so they capture all the books you're trying to throw away. They put them in on, they call it a book sale, and bring them right back into your building. Does that ever happen here? Right? But that's not a library, right? And there are things that we want to include in here that we don't. What do you do with things like the human library? What do you do with things when we borrow people back and forth? What do we do when we have body parts? And you sit there and go, body parts? Yes. Colleges and universities that have anatomy programs and health programs, they've literally blown out body parts, right? But is that a library? Yes. What about databases? What about materials? What about mobile libraries? Right, I've seen mobile libraries, we talk about bookmobiles and book carts. In Kenya, they have camels. And camels are the most essential animal in the lives of the northern tribes. They're so remote from the cities of Kenya that donkeys can't even get there. And so what a camel does within the village is it provides labor, it provides transportation, it provides fuel for the fire. I don't want to go into too much detail on that. And when they die, they provide food. And what they've done in the Kenyan Library Service is they've now packed onto them materials, tents, and they actually bring the camels into the remote villages, set up the tents, and begin working with villagers, teaching them how to read, teaching them what's going on, talking about opportunities, telling stories, and education. The camel has become yet more essential to these communities because now not only is it fuel, food, and transportation, but it's learning and opportunity and understanding. Camels don't fit into this definition. Right? This definition doesn't work, and yet this is the definition that is widely held by communities throughout the United States, throughout Italy, throughout Norway, and I'm guessing throughout the UK. So what do we do about this? Well, let's begin by defining a library by the librarians. We define the building. They named the building after us. Now, this is a purely American strategy that I really recommend you adopt. We call it historical revisionism. It's practiced primarily by politicians in our country, and it goes something like this. This is the history as it should have happened, regardless of the facts. So, I'm going to say they named the building after us. It's not true, but think about it for a moment. Think about this idea if we had a room for books and materials, and we called it a library. If that's the definition, then you're the book people. By the way, if you're the book people, you, and I apologize for my American slang, suck at it. Why do I say that? How many people, when you get a book for your collection, put plastic on the outside? How about put a sticker with a barcode on it? How about let people take it home where they can eat? Right? If you are in the book business, you're doing it wrong. I was in the British Museum and they looked at, you know, King George's collections of materials. They're in the book business. They're protected behind humidity controlled where no one can touch them, but you can look at the spines longingly and they're worth millions of dollars. That's not our business. Stop it. Special collections, exception. But even the special collections, we weld the notion of preservation to access and understand that they're the same thing. And it doesn't mean to look at them admiringly, it means to study them and make sense and understand the world. So, librarians make libraries. Why? Because we build and operate institutions based on our mission. And what is the mission of a librarian? The mission of a librarian is to improve society. Feel free to stop it there. How? By facilitating knowledge creation in our communities. So when we create a library, this is the definition we need to look for. It is a mandated and mediated space, virtual and or physical, owned by the community, but stewarded by librarians and dedicated to knowledge creation. We're going to talk about that in a second. Mandated, you can't simply walk in and say, here's a room, yay, we have a library, and no one comes, and no one cares. So we mandate it. How? Charters, laws. We create organizations. We create budget lines in business settings. We set aside space. We as a community come together and say, we want a library. But it's mediated. It's not just we have a space. It's mediated by librarians. When you walk into, I was just walked next door to a beautiful Liverpool library, right? It had materials in an order, and some were highlighted, and some were on the first floor, and some were on the third floor. That didn't just happen randomly. It happened because we mediated it. That power that librarians bring to it, we mediate the space. So when people talk about, great, we have a library, let's get volunteers to run it, they're missing the idea that we mediate this. Owned by the community. I want to be really clear about this one. Who owns it? The community owns it, which means they should have a voice in it. They should have a say. They should have part of it. But it also means they have a shared responsibility. Stop telling people that library services are free. They are not free. Unless you're working for gratis, taxes, tuition dollars, feedback, budget lines, overhead, all of these things pay. They may be free at point of service, but they are not free. So they are owned by the community, and the community has a responsibility to keep it going. All too often, we let them off the hook. When we use the language like, the customer is always right, when we use the language of customer, when we use the word, we are absolving them of their responsibility. We need to stop that. They have a responsibility to us as much as we to them. Stewarded by librarians, meaning we provide intellectual control and dedicated to knowledge creation. Which brings us to a set of other demons and a drink of water. I know, I started out with jokes and then I got all serious on you. The next demon we need to conquer are collections. Collections. A library is about its collection. Librarians are collection stewards. No. Librarians can use collections. Librarians can be part of collections, can build collections, but they can be librarians without collections. You don't become not a librarian when you go home because you've left your librarianship back in the building. Ask your significant other. They will tell you how annoying it is that you did not leave your librarian self back at home. Recognize the shift in collections. The first thing is, even if you're a collection freak, we need as a profession to give ourselves an enormous pat on the back for the past 20 years. Because our concept of a collection has changed so radically as to be unrecognizable, and yet we don't even acknowledge that fact. What do I mean? Libraries used to be about what they bought and what they owned and what they had. Right? We bought the papers, we bought the books, we bought the materials, we bought the prints, we organized them, they're on our shelves, they're ours. Not only did we buy them, but we chose them, and we knew every part of them. And then something odd happened. People began saying, hey, look at this thing, it's called a reference resource. And we made them electronic, and so CD-ROMs started making their ways in. Right? CD-ROMs, you sit there and go, yeah, Dave, CD-ROMs, big deal. Think about what you did. You provided access to a collection of materials that you no longer knew the scope, the scale, and what was on that CD-ROM. You couldn't. Librarians became knowers of their collections to access points, to finders, to searchers. We made our collections porous. We suddenly were allowing things into our collections that we did not uniquely select. And if you say, yes, we did, we picked the CD, I think you're missing the point of the hundreds of thousands of articles that came with that CD that you didn't pick. And when we put them online, it's the same thing. And then the internet came, we said, now you can access the internet, and the internet became our collections. Today, our collections are primarily leased or rented. They are out of our control. We've let other people do the selection criterion for them. And they're multimedia. They include films and movies and data sets and databases and digital items. We have radically changed what a collection is, and we need to look at that and acknowledge it and frankly give ourselves a lot of credit for it to happen. So when I talk about traditional librarians are all about cataloging, remind them every so often that they're the ones who made choices to radically change the concept of a library. So if you find people are resistant going, oh, that's not a library because it's not about the collection, pause for a moment and ask them what the collection is. The other thing we haven't done, though we think we've done a great job, is we need to recognize that we have built beautiful barriers in service. What do I mean by that? Makerspaces. We loan out baking pans. We have 3D printers. We want to do this. We want to do that. We want to do publishing of books. We want to do gaming. I went over to Liverpool. They have a whole room dedicated to computer gaming. Right? Clearly, the public services of librarians have changed so radically as to be unrecognizable. No. And you say, what do you mean, no? I didn't learn makerspaces in library school. It's a change, Dave, right? This is the part that hasn't changed. I know this sounds, how can I help you, like the most wonderful invitation and gift we can give to our publics. It sounds like we are being altruistic. It sounds like what we are saying is we're of service, that it's noble. I want you to think, however, about that phrase for a moment, and I want you to just give me a moment to think about it as one of the most arrogant things you can say. Wait, what? No, that's not arrogant. How can I help you? Because clearly you couldn't help me. How can I be of service to you? Because obviously you're here because you have a problem. I was at Harvard for a while, and people, when I came back from Harvard, people said, are they really snooty and arrogant people? I said, no, they're lovely people. They're lovely people. They let the buildings be arrogant for them, right? I'm sure it's nothing like Oxford or Cambridge that way, right? It's like, hey, how's it going, Dave? Oh, by the way, this building's, 1,200 years old. Have a good day, you know. In the U.S., et cetera. But what I mean by that is whenever I would go to them and say, hey, can I give a talk? No, this is your time. We're here for you. Hey, have you thought about trying this service? No, really, we've got this. Maybe you want to study how we do it. So when people walk into your library and they want your service, how much of them are you inviting them to provide service? And how much of it is, no, we'll help you. In the U.S., we have this thing called STEM education, S-T-E-M, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. And the idea is that we want librarians to start promoting STEM literacy. You know what the worst way for librarians to promote STEM literacy is? Becoming STEM experts. Right? I don't know, once again, maybe different in the UK, but a lot of librarians come from a humanities background. They come from the idea of wanting to understand literature and reading, writing, etc. And so if we look at standard services, which is I don't offer a service unless I, as a librarian, understand completely what's going to happen here. I've read the book, I know the story time, I've tried it out, etc. The idea that we would invite a community member in to make up a service that's offered in our space, that's bizarre. Because we've set up this thing of how can I serve you? So we need to understand that our collections are our community, that the expertise that we need to bring to our communities actually lies very much in the community. Our communities, if you're an academic, your community consists of scholars, of law, of doctors, of medicine, of social science, of humanities, of history, of literature. And if you're in a public setting, it consists of lawyers and tax experts and mechanics and engineers and brilliant people. That's the collection. How do we unleash that collection and connect people? How, instead of thinking of the library as an adjunct service where people come to learn, we look at the library as weavers, as knitters, knitting together the expertise, understanding, desires of our community to serve itself. What a much more powerful idea. Which brings me to this one. We need to conquer our demon of books. Knowledge, it's all about knowledge. It's all about knowledge, and knowledge is not a thing. Those things on your shelves are not knowledge. I know. If you take one off and you put it up to your head or sprinkle it over your head, you don't suddenly become more knowledgeable. I would have passed high school French had that worked. At best, books, journals, materials, written items can spark knowledge, can spark learning. What you have is a beautiful collection not of knowledge, but of knowledge starters, of kindling for a fire of understanding. And that's beautiful. But never forget what we're in. We are in the building knowledge business, which is learning, not learning with books. And if you say, yes, we're learning with books, then what century are you living in? Were you learning with scrolls 1,000 years ago? Another fabulous joke. When the Library of Alexandria probably had decided to go from tablets to scrolls, I'm sure they had a committee on mobile technology. Well, I don't know. Will people know how to access it? You have to turn these. If they drop them, they might tear. That's a fragile technology. Can we get IT to under-support the scroll? We're not learning with databases. We're not learning with microfiche. I mean, did we run around in the 60s going, yes, microfiche, now they'll learn? No. Stop it. We're in the learning business, full stop, just learning. And we'll use whatever tool is necessary to make that happen. Librarians, you are educators. You are educators. When someone asks you what you do, and you say librarian, and they go, aw. Or sometimes they go, oh. Right? But it sort of stops the conversation, or else it turns into one of those really uncomfortable conversations with you going, yes, there's still libraries. Yes, e-books really did change the world. Thank you very much. Drink. Right? Next time they say that, say, what are you? I'd say, I'm an educator. And they go, oh, what class, what school do you teach? What level do you teach? Just say, I teach them all. And then go into a discussion about, yes, I work with undergraduate students, and I work with faculty, and I work with millers, and I work with minors, and I work with minors, you know, those kind of minors, and I work with different, right? That's where we are. You are educators. Those books, those materials, those microfiche, those databases, they are just there as tools. I'll give you an example. This is a wonderful article, Getting African-American Boys to Read with Barbershop Books. It's a wonderful story about a lawyer done good, made money, and he started putting book collections in barbershops so that the African-American boys would read. And it was about reading promotion, and guess what he called these things? Libraries. He called the racks of books in the barbershop libraries. Now, this is one of those things that you don't want to be standing up on a stage in front of lots of people and going, this idiot, right? He's clearly doing good. This is a good thing. But this is an opportunity for us to engage and say, boy, if you'd really like those to be libraries, maybe we could work with a local public library. We can circulate those in and out. When they read that book that really gets them excited, we can help them find the next book. When they understand and want to try some of this, we can put them in 3D printing world and manufacturing. Imagine if those really were libraries sitting there, what these folks could learn. So this is not a bad thing, but this is not a library. We need to get over the idea that libraries are about books. They are not. They never have been. They have been collecting resources to help people learn in the United States, in the UK, in Scandinavian countries, in China. They are there to promote informed democracy. They have a much more noble goal than killing some time on a Thursday with 50 Shades of Grey. Stop it! Right? Just your learning. Now, next part of our action plan. Now that we've got that all figured out, we're librarians, we build libraries or not, they have collections or not, but we're educators and it's all about learning. What do we do with that? We need to learn how to control the narrative. The crisis narrative is useful but fleeting and demoralizing. As in the US, as I read now currently, when you talk about public libraries, we're all doomed. We're all out of, they're closing them all, it's horrible, it's bad. And I want to be really clear, it is horrible and it is bad. But it is not done and it's not over. And if all you do is run around and say, it is horrible and it is bad, it will continue to be horrible and bad because what you're asking for is for your councils, your politicians, your Senate committees, your presidents to take pity on you. And that's not a good position to be in. What we need to do is change the narrative. People respond to aspirations more than deficits. It is not that I'm worried about losing my job. You are. It's fine. That's human. But you realize if you lose my job, then that kid's not going to get the extra help they need. That minor's not going to give the access to new materials and resources. They're not going to understand the capabilities and what they can teach. The narrative that we need to talk about is not how it damages us, but how it damages the communities that we serve. And it damages the communities we serve, not if they don't get access to books. If that is the argument you make, there is a very quick response. We'll give them more books. I love telling tales of when U.S. politicians do really smart things. I do it so rarely because politicians do things like, in Iowa, there was a study that showed that students perform better in primary and secondary school the more books they have at home. The legislator said, great, we're going to take the library money and buy books and give them to people in their homes. Take a minute. There is another study, unrelated, but I think you'll see my point in a moment, that looked at the idea of when you put babies to sleep, should you turn the lights on or off while they're sleeping? You're going, Dave, books, stick with me. They studied a number of babies, and they found that, in fact, babies that were put to sleep with the lights on needed glasses, whereas babies primarily sleeping in the dark did not. Great study, until they looked at the parents. Turns out that parents with glasses tend to leave the lights on when they put, right? Books in a house is indicative of a culture of learning and understanding and reading, not indicative of access, right? So if you keep saying, but they'll not get their books, they'll say, yes, they can. You want to say, but they won't get their opportunities for economic development, they won't get their opportunities for self-actualization, they won't get greater education performance, they won't get... We see this in primary and secondary schools. It is not the presence of a library that leads to increased student performance, it is the presence of a certified, trained school librarian that makes the difference. It is not about books, it is about librarianship. Yes, some librarians have tattoos. So in the U.S., all that wonderful literature about libraries are dying, libraries are obsolete, libraries go away. We wrote all those articles. The internet was going to put us out of business, right? Then the web was going to put us out of business. Everyone's going to put us out of business. And all these things showed up in all the articles. And then the reporters, 5 years, started going back to the libraries that were supposed to be closed, and they noticed they were busier than ever. And they looked around and they said, what's going on? You're supposed to be out of business. And they found librarians with tattoos. And so I swear to God, go to your favorite search engine and do a search for librarians and tattoos, and you will find an enormous number of articles, mostly from the U.S., about librarians having tattoos. Now, if you have ever lost a great deal of weight in your life, you will be familiar with this. It's when you walk in and you haven't seen someone for 5 years and you've lost 10 pounds, and they look at you and go, you've changed your hair. Right? No, I've changed my body. Clearly, I haven't. But anyway, right? This is what happened, was they wanted something different, something's new. They had a vacuum because they had to explain why they were wrong. And we, as librarians, weren't giving them a narrative, so they found their own, and their narrative was librarians are cool and they have tattoos, and that's wee. Remember when getting tattoos was a sign of resistance and, you know, threat against authority, and not, you know, I'm at 16 years old and I've got some extra babysitting money. Remember that? All right. I love tattoos. Right. This is the problem, is there's a vacuum. How much are you working with local press? How much are you working with your university press? How much are you working to talk about the narratives of, we have a great library, not, yes, we're still open, not, oh, they're putting us out of business, yes, we have books, but let's talk about the stories that make a difference. The problems with a book plus messaging is this thing about don't think of an elephant. Fabulous book. It's social psychology. What it means is if I tell you, ready? We're going to do an experiment. Everyone ready for an experiment? This is good. Don't think of the color red. How many of you just thought about the color red? Right? Our brains are built to do that. When you hear something over and over again, our brains pick up the repetition. They don't pick up the nuance. So when Richard Nixon, President of the United States, gets up and says, I am not a crook, after 300 articles have been published about how he was a crook, all you hear is, I am a crook. So when you start keep saying, libraries are more than books, libraries are more than books, we have more than books, people keep hearing books, 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 books. And it's not that books are evil, it's not that I hate books and reading. I want to be really clear here. I'm much more impressed with what books do than the physical thing about books. Let's talk about impact. Let's talk about measurement. Let's talk about what we're doing. Now, controlling the narrative. Jamie LaRue gave a fabulous presentation on what he calls 7 important messages. And I've added, see which part I've added, right? We're librarians. Stop saying the library is here to do it. I mean, I love in Europe, you guys have addressed, you know, when you talk about in college, you don't have the school of so-and-so, you have the faculty of. Why don't we do that with libraries? The librarians of Liverpool. are going to offer a program next week. Let's remind them that we're here, right? We, librarians, are here for you in tough times. Now, in the U.S., examples, here are three examples of where that happened. This first picture where you see everyone lined up, this is Hurricane Sandy. This is a hurricane that came through the eastern seaboard, wiped out a huge number of homes, flooding through New York City, wiped out power grids, and libraries opened up and said, come recharge here. Come here, and we can help you get food, we can help you get power, we can help you get your cell phone working, we can connect you. Even though the librarians were living in houses that were flooded and broken and torn down, they still opened them. And they took their bookmobiles, and they threw as many remote battery chargers as they could, and they started driving through the streets of New Jersey to power people up. We are here when times are tough. So now when you hear about natural disasters, librarians are included in disaster planning. They're included in city plans, they're included in state plans, they're included in municipal plans for emergency services because we are here. This is Ferguson. So in Ferguson, Missouri, which is in the middle, in the Midwest, which is sort of what we call flyover country in the United States, right? It's sort of, oh, that's the Midwest. It's nice and boring there. A white cop kills a black kid. A white cop that turns out is a white cop on a majority white police force as part of a majority African-American community. Led to protests. Protests led to riots. Led to destructions. What happened was the governor called a curfew. He kept everyone at home. He closed the schools. He called out the National Guard. Armored people. We're talking in the middle of America, people with bulletproof vests and semi-automatic rifles and riot gear, and I swear to God, armored tanks pulled into the streets of Missouri to bring down the protests. Now, I said they closed the schools. You go, so what? Well, in the United States, we have this thing called free and reduced lunches, which means for children under a certain economic level, they get food at school. So these kids were not only home during protests and riots and hearing tear gas explode outside of their homes, they were hungry and they were tired. And this narrative went all across the U.S. Oh, black on white violence. It's violence. It's horrible. It's black and white. It's out there and it's over there. And this little sign went up in front of the Ferguson Public Library. Stay strong, Ferguson, we are family. And you say, oh, big deal. Then Scott Bonner, who had been on the job for about 2 weeks, opened up the library and invited all the teachers from the closed school to teach in the library. When they ran out of room in the library, they started teaching in the local churches and the local museums. They had food services coming in that served kids food while they were in the library. They were there in a time. And this turned something different. Suddenly, instead of it being black on white violence out there, it was, we're a family. And there are families who need help. And there are families who need help in Syracuse. And there are families that need help in California. And there are families that need help in London. And there, suddenly, we all got that narrative. What they did is they changed the understanding of that situation, and they included everyone. We're there in tough times. Then in Baltimore, they did it. White cops throw a black guy in the back of a police van, break his neck, and he dies. Leads to a massive peaceful protest, 32,000 people on the street. But anger bubbles over. And in a community in downtown Baltimore, they began looting and tearing up every business, everything around them. And guess what? The library opened. The library was opened on the very next day. And why was the library open? That's Melanie Townsend Diggs. Why did she open it? Because those people living down there who have no transportation, have no finance, had no access to public bathrooms, had no place to buy diapers, had no place to buy food, and the library became the place to do it. We are there in tough times. We serve. Right? That's what service means. Next narrative. We think ahead. You want to read what happened here in 200 years ago? Good news, there was a librarian 200 years ago who said, we should probably keep that. We should probably capture that. We should probably think ahead. Right? It's not about the collection. It's about collections over time. We are co-creators. Why do we have maker spaces? It's the same reason that we invite authors into the library. It's the same reason that academic libraries were run by historians. These are laboratories where people come to create. Yes, to read, yes, to be there, but to search, but to create new thoughts, new ideas, new memories, new product, new ideas, everything. We are here and we co-create. We make things better. This was a study done by the Prosperity Institute on the Toronto Public Library. One of their findings, the Toronto Public Library delivers $5.63 of economic impact for every dollar spent. We're here because Toronto Public Library creates over $1 billion total economic impact. Now, before you get out there and you're going to say, Dave, don't go all marketplace on me, they also provide access to education, new opportunities, learning. They talk about what it means to be in our local culture, how to preserve our local culture. They are the largest collection of Canadian history in the world next to the University of Toronto. We have impact. What stories do we have? We build community. You can trust us. In these days of walled gardens and Apple and all of these things, we love to talk about the idea that, oh, who can you trust? Us. Who's watching us, right? So how many people have one of these in their pockets? I know I'm going long. I'm almost done. Yes. How many? All right. Show of hands. How many people use your smartphone? How many people are online, on the internet, for an hour a day using your smartphones? Hands up. Keep them up. How many 2 hours? 3, 5, 6. Yeah. If you have one of these, 24 hours a day. Right now, Apple knows where I am. Apple knows, by the way, that I'm jiggling this. Hello. There's a Harvard professor who looked at the motion sensor they put in there, and he could tell within 90% accuracy of who had the flu. Because when you have the flu, you're at home, and it does this, and every so often it does one of these. They can trust us. Librarians and libraries will endure. Next thing, and I'm going to run through these quickly. We need to be invited. So next part of our plan, get out of your building. Get out of your building. Leave your building. The building is for the community. Stop it. It's not for you. Go away. You should be in council meetings. You should be in arts council meetings. You should be in faculty meetings. You should be in principal meetings. You should be in departmental meetings. And you say, well, what am I going to do when I'm there? Listen. What do you do? If someone's going to do reference and they walk up and they have a question, what do? You listen. And ask a few questions. And once you feel you have an understanding of what they need, you begin providing resources. It's called reference. Go do reference. So that when you're in a council meeting, when you're in economic development, arts council, whatever it is, and people, you listen, and then you go, hey, you know what? I think you could use this. And if you go to enough of them, you do collection development. So you go, hey, you know, they're doing the same thing. Maybe you can work together. And you begin weaving and knitting your community together. Embed yourself within research teams. Embed yourself within different systems. You don't have to all work under the same roof. Every hotspot's a library. In the U.S., we're starting to offer hotspots because we have, you know, this market condition that's going to solve all the problems and leave half of the people without internet access. So they're loaning out cellular hotspots. That's now the library in their home. What services can you provide there? How can you be part of it? How can you be wherever your community member has one of these? And what are we going to do when we're there? Why are we dominating the world? We're dominating the world so that we can add value. We're dominating the view because we want to bring our professional values. Do librarians have to work in libraries? I know I'm way over time. Do librarians have to work in libraries? No. Are they still librarians? Yes. Why? Because we need you guys working in the banks of the world to stop them destroying our economy. We need them to work in the government so that instead of us being us versus them, we're in them. Run for city council. If you're worried about the city councils cutting libraries, have you run for city council? Run for it. Take it over. And what are the results of this? The results of this is that, yes, we look like the community, not each other. When I go to Liverpool, I should be able to walk in and understand what it's like to be in Liverpool. When I walk into Birmingham, I should walk in and see what it's like to be in Birmingham. Let's stop with the idea of cookie-cutter services that we all have to look the same. Maybe we have maker spaces or entrepreneurship. Maybe we have true university presses that support faculty videos and blogging. Maybe we have collections of fishing poles and lectures and author talks. My final comment, because I've now gone way over time, is for you now sitting there, it's your turn to try and incorporate this. And one of your reactions will be, well, that's easy for you to say. It's easy for you. In the States, it's different. In the United States, it's different. And I can buy that. When the Siege Heart report came out and I put out some comments on it, I got a lot of feedback going, oh, Lankus doesn't get it. Parliament will never do that. These people don't understand. They're all about this. If you had told me 5-10 years ago I would be living in a country that just legalized same-sex marriage, and where the White House, literally the seat of world power, has a rainbow flag projected upon it in a land that has national health care, and where we're finally starting to have an honest debate about institutional racism, I would have said, you're nuts. And you know what happened? People didn't listen to me, and instead they went to change the world. My invitation to you is not to be good librarians because it's nice. To be a good librarian does not mean that you sort or catalog faster. It does not mean you take care of a collection. It doesn't mean you work in a library. Being a librarian is not about AACR2 or the MARC format or RDA or how you search. Being a librarian is about being someone who believes that they can change society for the better through knowledge. Being a librarian today is about changing the world, not documenting it, not sharing it, not circulating it. When you are in your communities, you are a part of an international world distributed network of knowledge agents out to improve the world, to improve it for everyone and all people. Never underestimate your power. Never underestimate your job. Never underestimate the task before you. That is what we're about. That is what we can do, regardless of country, regardless of library type, regardless of color or age. It doesn't matter. Change the world. Thank you very much.